Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd. Such a busy weekend. The NFL, the Major League Baseball season is done, unless you're heading to the postseason. And, of course, college football, high school football. What more do you need, Sean Boyd?
Yeah, it was a great weekend to end it off. If you're an NFL fan, which, man, I believe 99.9% of America is, and man, Sean Wally, it was a great weekend for you, your team, and actually I should say teams plural for all of us, man, because I don't think one of our teams lost, so that's awesome.
In the football world, yes, things are grand to say the least. Gosh. And jeez. I know that both you and I, yeah, the two that make up the Double S Express, were busy working football games this weekend.
Yeah, you know, I had the chance to be in Santa Clara for, all I can say, Sean, is it's going to be a long, long year for the San Francisco Santa Clara 49ers. They came out looking like world beaters in the first quarter. They went out 14-0 against America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. And then, you know, hey, don't bother showing up. You know, the bottom drops out and they take one on the chin. And gosh, I got to tell you, Sean, being in that stadium, you know, where Levi Stadium, where the Super Bowl was this past year, the home of the 49ers, there isn't a home field advantage feel to it. I mean, especially when the Dallas Cowboys come to town, I believe that there were more Dallas Cowboy fans. As a matter of fact, I know there were more Dallas Cowboy fans than there was 49er fans. The Dallas Cowboy fans came out in droves and, you know, they weren't disappointed.
Well, you know, if you're a Cowboy fan, you like the fact that the fans travel well. Of course, Sean, you talk about how the Raider Nation travels well. You know, the Seahawks, there were a lot of fans in the Meadowlands they used to play in the Meadowlands, not there anymore, but for the game against the Jets. So, you know, for fans of those teams, the away teams, it's nice to see your team being represented. But if you're a fan of the home team, the Jets, the 49ers, all you can do is shake your head, because how are they getting tickets so easily, and why are they making it look like a neutral game, if not a home game, for the visiting team?
Yeah, man. Well, you know, for the Oakland Raiders, man, I could tell you win, lose, or tie, no matter what the stadium around the country, their presence is felt. And in Baltimore, it was no different. The Raider Nation came out in droves, and it seemed like a home game. And, man, what a great, great football game for the Oakland Raiders to actually have the lead, sustain the lead for most of the game. Gave it up late, but, man, Derek Carr, he is starting to become the quarterback that, you know, the Oakland Raiders hoped, the front office hoped that he would be. And he is steady, and he is a game changer, and he will always keep you in the football game. He marched down the field along with Michael Crabtree, having three touchdowns on the day. Great come from behind victory, 28-27, to put the Raiders at, man, 3-1 for the first quarter of the season, Sean Wally.
And if you believe some of the national talking heads on the sport of football, some say the Raiders potentially could be 7-1 with a big matchup with the Denver Broncos midway through the season.
Gosh, you know, I don't buy that. I you know, when they come up with these predictions and everything, it doesn't mean anything. The Oakland Raiders have the San Diego Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs respectively coming up, which are divisional games. Granted, both of them San Diego will be at home, but they're always tough games. The divisional games are tough games. So for anybody to say that the Raiders will be 7-1, you know, after halfway through the season, that is fallacy. These guys have to play. San Diego is tough. Even though they're 1-3, every last one of their games has come down to the last second. You know, and so, you know, these teams are tough. You know, I believe that the Raiders are on their way, but, you know, there's some work to be done. I appreciate the 7-1, but man, don't feed me any of that.
Sean, speaking of work to be done, our first guest joining us on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines has a little bit of work left ahead of him, and that is Matt Snyder of CBS Sports, baseball writer, CBSSports.com, and of course, the CBS Sports app. Matt, thanks for your time tonight.
Oh, sure thing. Just gearing up for the playoffs here, man.
Hey, some great stuff. The playoffs upon us. The AL, the NL have things intact. Man, was it everything that you thought it would be down the stretch?
No. I was hoping for mass chaos after yesterday, or even as of Friday, like it looping the Mariners in there, or even like before that, looping the Astros in there. Like, I wanted like a 5 or 6-way tie or something like that just to see it. But, you know, we get our hopes up every year, and it seems like you're always let down on that front. We usually only get like one-game playoff, and they have Monday open for that anyway. So, yeah. I mean, other than that, it was fine. Most of the division races were decided way too early, but, you know, the wild card kept things interesting all the way to the end. So it was good, but I kind of feel like the best is yet to come.
Now, speaking of the wild card, especially in the AL, you mentioned the Seattle Mariners. Of course, the Mariners have put themselves in a position to actually get to that next level. Of course, 2 years ago, they were one game away. And just 2 days ago, it seemed like they were one game away. Baltimore was faltering. Toronto was shaky. And it seemed like it was ripe for the picking. What stopped Seattle from getting themselves to that postseason?
Generally speaking, it was the hills and valleys. I mean, it seemed like every time they got hot, here comes just a terrible stretch. I mean, what was that? About midway through August, early mid-August, they got insanely hot and started to get back in it. And you're starting to look like, oh, they're in good shape now. And they lose something like 9 out of 10. And it extended and it got even worse until they got hot again. And I believe they won 8 in a row. But then they got cold again after that. And it just, I called them several times in my power rankings the biggest tees in the league, because it's like they kept getting the fans' hopes up and then completely falling apart, saying, oh, by the way, never mind. No, we're not going to the playoffs. So, got to find ways to stave off those really bad stretches. I understand after you win 8 in a row, you maybe lose 2 in a row, but then you need to get right back on track, and you can't continue the losing ways and have it just totally, basically, every time they started to get hot in the second half, they canceled it out with an equally as cold stretch. So, that just can't happen. And really, going into that weekend, we say they're right on those teams' heels. You can't put yourself in a position to be trailing somebody. You've got to be the team that's ahead, like the Orioles and Blue Jays were, to where they can say, all right, well, now let's just go get 2 wins and we're in. Not let's get wins and watch the scoreboard and hope they lose.
And, Matt, I'm sure you paid attention to the game in Seattle on Saturday that eventually drove the final nail into the Mariners' coffin for the season. A great battle with the Oakland A's. And really that game almost was a microcosm of the entire season. It's a game they absolutely had to have, and here goes Iwakuma, a good pitcher, but it seems whenever there's a little pressure, he tends to crack, and he did that against the A's. Mariners down 4-2, 5-2. Cano with the home run, 5-4. Then it gets out to 7-4. The A's take the lead. The wind's out of the sails. Somehow the Mariners keep fighting, keep battling back, end up tying it at 8 just to lose it in the 10th.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what you said. It was a microcosm for the season. You know, they jump out to that 2-0, 2-0 lead. You know, they got off to a good start this year. Then they gave up the 4. Well, they went through bad stretches. It's like you said, they get big hits, and then they just seem to give it right back. And then to lose in 10 to a kind of nameless, faceless team at this point in the A's, that really was, as you said, I couldn't put it better myself. It was exactly how that season went. It was an entire gigantic tease. Just when you think, oh no, they're down, then oh no, here they go. It's like it just when I'm out, I think I'm out, they pull me back in moment. And yeah, they just kept doing it until they finally said, oh yeah, never mind, by the way, we're not going to make the playoffs. So it's a shame. I really wanted them to make the playoffs this year, because, you know, we've seen droughts broken recently. We saw the Pirates break the longest drought of not having a winning season in baseball. Then we saw the Royals break the longest playoff drought. And then last year we saw the Blue Jays break the longest playoff drought, and this year it was the Mariners. I thought that would have been cool to see 4 in a row go down like that, and they were right there.
Matt, what do you think is better for any team, including the Mariners, what they did this year, the yo-yo effect of we're good, we're there, oh, no, we're not that good. No, yes, here we come again. Like the ebb and flow of the season, is it better for a team to be there to the last weekend to ultimately fall off that cliff or jump off that cliff in June?
So long as it's somebody like the Mariners who I think you're still set up in a position to win next year, as long as they make some good moves in the offseason, which it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. But you'd like to see the rotation become a little bit more strong. You'd like to see kind of some picking and choosing in the bullpen and try to improve that. But overall, if they return largely the same nucleus, which I expect them to do, I think it's always better to have been competitive and have had most of that nucleus together, experience a pennant race together.
Matt Snyder, CBSSports.com, joining us here on The Double. Now, Matt, you had mentioned the roller coaster ride of the season. Now, there are some Mariner faithful that stayed through this thing through the end, and my co-host, oh my God, is one of them. But what we saw the last month of the season, as far as the fan base getting on board, it was lacking a little bit. And do you blame them for the lack of turnout for the last few games of the season?
Now, I'm never going to sit there and try to tell people how to spend their money. And, I mean, again, when you go through the stretches like they went through in late August and looping into early September, I think that's probably where a lot of people kind of said, yeah, I'm kind of giving up. I'm pulling the plug on this thing. Even with the 8-game winning streak, they didn't even pull into a playoff spot. So and not only that, but the drought since 2001 and how disappointing 2001 ended, you can see why the fans would be pretty well beaten down. And generally speaking, you don't really see that attendance spike until the next year. Like, you didn't see the Blue Jays' attendance blow up until this year. You didn't see the Royals' attendance blow up until last year after they had that World Series run. So usually it's more people showing up after they see something great happen the year before, and then they finally start to believe. And again, I'm talking more of the casual fans. Like, the diehards are always going to be there. Filling the place up, you need the casual fans. So the casual fans, maybe they pay more attention next year since they were into the race all the way to the end, but it might take a playoff berth before fans show up in the playoffs, and then the next year you start to see that big attendance spike.
Now, of course, tomorrow, Matt, we've got a huge game, the AL wild card, Baltimore at Toronto. Man, who do you see coming out? I mean, these one-game wild cards, it seems like you play 162 games to get that one shot yeah. If you're a wild card. And then it all can come to an end right then and there. Who do you see winning that one?
Absolutely. Yeah, don't ask the Pirates about that pain. After 98 wins last year, getting a one-and-done against Jake Arrieta. That's a rough, rough season, man. I picked the Orioles, but it's one game. So I'm just looking. I see two slugging teams heavily relying on the home run. I feel like Stroman is going to be a lot more prone to giving up bombs tomorrow than Tillman, but Tillman can be had as well with a long ball. So I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be high scoring. I think it's going to be close. I went with the Orioles based on I think Stroman has the capability to get lit up, and then if the Orioles can get it to the late innings in their bullpen, especially if Britton's ready to go maybe two at the end of the game, I think that that's a big advantage for them.
Now, of course, Matt, the other game, the other wild card on Wednesday, San Francisco versus the Mets. Now, nobody has made a slide. I mean, well, we've seen teams do this maybe once or, you know, occasionally, but San Francisco had a horrible second half of the season. This is what the Bay Area calls an even year, but they're going up against a tough New York Mets team. Do you see San Francisco pulling this out in a one-game series?
I actually was the only one that, at CBS who picked the Mets to win it. There's something about this Giants team. It's just not right. I know they had to win a few games down the stretch, but they still had one of the worst records in baseball. They were for a while, they had a worse record than the Twins in the second half. And it's hard to trust. It's not just a few weeks. That's a large sample of them totally not being right. And I know Madison Bumgarner in the playoffs last year was absolutely transcendent, but that was 2014. This year, he has a 3.88 ERA in the second half. He's had several stinkers in the second half, and while I by no means think he's going to be bad, I just wonder if somebody at some point, like, say, Yoenis Cespedes, is going to get him And I ended up predicting the score to be 2-0. I think Syndergaard's going to go out and deal. I think he's going to get the ball to Addison Reed, and Reed's going to get the ball to Jerry Familia, and they're not going to let the Giants get on the board. That's just my gut feeling more than anything else. It's just there's just something missing. But I might have said that in 2014, and they won the World Series. So by no means am I going to count that out. And I'll tell you what, if they do win, the Cubs are going to have their hands full. Because as long as Cueto's groin is better, you get Cueto in game one. Samardzija in game two is not bad. I think the Cubs can get to him, but he's not bad. And then you've got Bumgarner in game three against Arrieta, who struggled the second half. So I still think the Cubs would win that series, but I think it might take them five. And I don't think they want to sweat that bad. I think they could get rid of the Mets in three or four. So I'm guessing the Cubs are going to be sitting at home rooting for the Mets.
Matt, how in the world does David Ortiz retire after this playoff run in Boston? Nearly 40 home runs, still swinging the stick. Is he really ready to walk away?
I think so. I mean, he talked about how his body was telling him this had to be it, and he was just exhausted. And really, there's something to be said for going out like this. I know it's a different sport. And I guess this is going to be a terrible example since he won the Super Bowl, but the Peyton Manning last year, in terms of his performance in his stat line, that wasn't the same guy. And there's something to be said to not be Willie Mays bumping around in his last year with the Mets and looking like this is not the same guy. You don't want to go out like that. And there's a few guys, Roy Halladay, his last year. That just wasn't the vintage Roy Halladay anymore. And I know that it's selfish of us to think we want to see them go out and not see them be bad. Paul Konerko is one that comes to mind who's a non-Hall of Famer that I could bring into the mix. He was just really bad his last year. So the athletes themselves don't like to struggle like that and deal with a season like that. So I also wonder if that's in his mind, as exhausted as he is, also thinking about, like, what if I do play next year and I'm not this good anymore? Then I'll have regretted that I came back, but I'm not a quitter, so I'm not going to give up in the middle of the season. So I'm sure that that's all been a consideration. I know a lot of people keep saying they still think he's going to come back, but I'm still firmly in the camp that I don't. I think he's done.
All right, Matt, are you a big prognosticator guy? Do you want to make a prediction on a World Series bout?
Oh, I've been wrong a lot, so I by no means am I shy to throw predictions out there.
That's okay.
I've been wrong hundreds
of
times already. Yeah. I've got Cubs for sure. I never really relented on that. I never saw any reason to change it, and I still don't see that. I think they actually are going to do it. In the AL, I'll go with the Red Sox, but I'm not confident in any of them from the sense that at the All-Star break, I like the Indians, but no Carrasco, no Salazar. I can't pick them over the Red Sox offense without those two. Rangers, I still don't trust that much. Their rotation is fine in the five-game series with Hamels and Darvish going three times, maybe four. But when you get in the longer series, those are the only two reliable guys. And you can get to Hamels, as you guys can attest. And in that bullpen, it's just not that good. So I'm not sure about either one of the wild cards either. So I'll go with Red Sox there. And some pretty big ratings there on Cubs-Red Sox World Series.
Matt Snyder, follow him on Twitter at Matt Snyder CBS, CBSSports.com, and the awesome CBS Sports app. Matt, thanks for your time, your insight, and heck, we'll do this again in 2017.
Okay, sounds good.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, right, Matt.
There goes Matt Snyder back east in and around Indianapolis, taking an evening off before he has to get back to work following the playoffs in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, you know, it was an exciting year. And, of course, you know, you can hear it in Matt's voice as well. It's just unfortunate that the M's could not pull it out. Man, 162 games that I'd mentioned before. And then, of course, you know, for those who don't win their division, they have to vie for this wild card, this winner take all, you know, one game deal to get into a series. It just seems unfair sometimes, you know, but, you know, for those teams that get into the wild card, there's a whole nother third of the season that starts. I mean, there's still a long ways to go when you think about it. you know, once postseason starts, Sean.
Absolutely, and there have been a lot of people that have wanted the regular season shortened because now the World Series goes into November. That's just wrong. Unless you have an indoor stadium where you can control the climate to be playing potentially in Cleveland where it's going to be snowing. I mean, that's insane.
You know, Cleveland, Boston, New York. I mean, it could be snowing anywhere, you know, that time of the year. And we have seen that before. You know, they call it, you know, that time of the year, October in the Midwest and in the East. Sometimes you see those guys in turtlenecks, Sean, and you know, they're kind of dancing around in the outfield. But, hey, that's the love of the game.
Well, until things get changed, and they may never be changed. 162 games from April through, well, the start of September, and well, geez, the end of September, and now here we are into October, and for the majority of baseball, it's over. A few teams still left.
Well, you know, for me, it's a weird way. Being an Oakland A's fan, Oakland Raiders fan, you know, if the A's aren't in it past the second half, I am very excited because sharing that field and seeing that dirt when the Raiders play is just horrific. And so with the A's season being over, we don't have to see that dirt and we can have an actual football field. But, hey, that's a whole nother story on these guys getting arenas and football stadiums. So we'll talk about that some other time. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to have our second guest here on the double, none other than Emmy Award-winning Aaron Levine from Q13 Sports. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
I'm gonna hop some tags, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is awesome.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Aaron Levine, Q13 Sports Director in Seattle. Aaron, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Hey, Aaron, so a great, great game yesterday. The Seattle Seahawks in New York taking on, man, I don't know what's going on with the Jets, but, man, Seattle went in there and they took care of business. What I was most excited about, Aaron, was the fact that Russell Wilson, despite the injuries on both legs, went in there and had a huge pass rating of 133 as he led his team to victory in New York.
Can you believe that was only the sixth time in his career he's thrown for 300 more yards? I had to look that up again. I was like, there's no way. And it's only the sixth time. You know, he usually passes for efficiency, and he'll get his touchdowns. Well, he got three of them yesterday. But the fact that he had more than 300 yards, it really shut a lot of the naysayers and critics up that thought that he should take the week off last week and rest that knee for a couple of weeks going into the bye week next week and then coming back for Atlanta. That's a big win for the Seahawks, regardless of how you look at it. 3-1 going into the bye week. The first quarter of the season is done. And probably one of the toughest front fours you're going to find, and not only the New York Jets, but you got through the Rams game, and despite it was a loss in that first week against the Dolphins and facing that front four. So three out of the first 4 weeks, you faced some of the best front fours in the entire league, and that was a really good challenge for that fairly new offensive line in Seattle, a really good way for them to build that chemistry going into the second quarter of the season.
Now, Aaron, I have to be honest with you. I'm one of those guys who, you know, didn't want to indoctrinate Russell Wilson too fast. But, you know, watching what he does, despite the injuries, despite the naysayers, how does he do this? I mean, you know, it just seems like he's supposed to go down at any given time, but he's Mr. Consistency. He continues to lead his team down the field and do the right things to get his team to victory.
Yeah, and it's all about the mindset also. I mean, it's between the two ears that we've really found that Russell Wilson is a gem. He's got the right attitude, and he's got the right toughness. I mean, there aren't a lot of players that could have fought through a sprained MCL the way that he did by coming back the very next week and playing on it. And he was forced to throw from the pocket a little bit more than he normally would. It's still two of the biggest plays of the game on that long pass to Tanner McAvoy. He was moving up in the pocket on that long pass to Doug Baldwin. He was moving up in that pocket. He was on the move a couple of times on those passes to Jimmy Graham. And he made the right decisions also. When he didn't have anything, he was able to throw the ball away. And Pete Carroll appreciated that. He said that earlier today in his press conference. Just really fun to watch the evolution of Russell Wilson, if you will. I mean, he's always been a solid scrambler, and what we learned in the second half of last year and the beginning of this year because of that injury this year is that he can pass from the pocket as well, and he's an incredibly accurate passer in that as well.
Aaron, how has it been learning about Russell and his mindset? And as you said, it's between his ears and the team of people he has personally assembled to help him and assist in healing the knee, the ankle, waking up in the middle of the night to ice and rehab.
It's certainly a team effort, isn't it? I mean, the fact that he brought his personal trainer up here from Southern California ever since that ankle injury that he suffered against the Dolphins in week one, somehow that ankle injury is back to close to 100%, and now he's just working on the knee. And in a couple of weeks, when he gets back from that bye, he could be close to 100% with the knee as well, and then you're looking at the Russell Wilson that threw how many touchdown passes? I think 19 touchdown passes in a 4 or 5 week span in weeks 11 to 15 last year. That's pretty incredible. So, yeah, the fact that he truly has no time to sleep, or he hasn't the last couple of weeks because he's been rehabbing at night with his personal trainer and working on the mental side of the game for however long we've known him here in Seattle is a really great thing. And I think the other great thing that came out of yesterday's game was the fact that the Seahawks finally were able to force multiple turnovers, just one total turnover coming into the game, and they had three of them yesterday. It should have been six. And again, this is against a Jets team that had eight total turnovers last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, and Ryan Fitzpatrick threw six interceptions last week. He had another three yesterday.
And coming back after the bye that is this next weekend, that Atlanta game looming larger than one might have thought when the schedule came out, because the Falcons are looking pretty good right now.
They are. What, 48 points yesterday against Carolina in the Georgia Dome. But I will say this: I think the Falcons are going to be a much different team coming to Seattle, playing in a very hostile environment than they were at home. But you look at those numbers from yesterday: 12 catches for 300 yards for Julio Jones and more than 500 passing yards for Matt Ryan. Dan Quinn is a defensive-minded coach, and you saw their offense go off yesterday. In fact, their offense has been incredibly solid the last 2 weeks. I don't know how many points they put up on New Orleans the week before. They've looked really good, and that was with Julio Jones, I believe, only one catch for 12 yards. So they have multiple weapons. Keep an eye on Tevin Coleman this week because I think he has a little issue, I think a sickle cell issue that he may or may not be playing in Denver. But that 1-2 punch of Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman's also incredibly solid also. So that should be a really fun matchup. Going to have a chance to talk to Pete Carroll next week on Seahawks Saturday night going into that game. And so just getting his thoughts on Dan Quinn's return to Seattle.
Aaron Levine joining us here on the Double, and of course, yet as you had mentioned with Dan Quinn, a reunion coming back to Seattle, offensive-minded Atlanta, and man, I can't say defensive-minded Seattle, even though the Legion of Boom is the strong prowess, a very balanced and excited Seattle Seahawks team ready to take on the Atlanta Falcons. Now, Aaron, C.J. Spiller, the addition, of course, he had 2 carries, 1 for a loss, but his long was 13 yards. What does that mean for Seattle's backfield moving forward?
Well, Pete Carroll told us today that C.J. Procise may or may not be ready when they come back from the bye week. Now, he's been practicing in full the last couple of weeks. And the reason I bring up C.J. Procise and not C.J. Spiller first is because the reason they acquired Spiller is because Procise hasn't been able to be active for game day because he's been wearing this cast on his hand. And what is he... what's his main function in Seattle is to be a third down back and to catch the ball out of the backfield. So if he can't catch the ball, then you need somebody else to do it. So that's the reason they needed that other guy in C.J. Spiller, and he obviously played very well after just 2 practices with the Seahawks this past week. So I could see Spiller being with this team as a third down back at least one more week if C.J. Procise isn't ready to go for the Atlanta game after the bye week. And then it's a wait and see. Is it something where you want to keep a veteran on your team? And if you do that, you're probably going to have to get rid of a rookie like Alex Collins. And I don't think they're going to want to do that. The fact that Alex Collins had a mediocre preseason and still made the team, and fortunately they've needed him as the number two back with Christian Michael the last few weeks because of the injury to Thomas Rawls. I think they still like the potential that Alex Collins brings to this team, and so it would be interesting to see what happens when C.J. Procise comes back fully healthy, ready to go as your full-time third down back, whether C.J. Spiller remains a Seahawk.
Well, nothing wrong with having a stable of running backs, and that's definitely the case in Seattle.
Oh, no doubt about that. I mean, especially this year, because you don't have that number one guy, or at least you don't have that go-to guy in Marshawn Lynch. I mean, Christian Michael finally had his first 100-yard game against the Niners, and he has an incredible reclamation project, and I don't think anybody in a million years thought that Christian Michael would be your number one guy in Seattle at one point after he was released, and he ended up going to the Dallas Cowboys, last season. He had so many opportunities to succeed in Seattle, and he failed in his first few years that the fact that he is the number one guy right now is pretty astonishing, but it's a great story nonetheless.
Now, Aaron, my co-host wanted me to ask you this question, so I'm definitely going to throw it out here. The Levine Bowl happened on Friday on Montlake. And holy smokes. I mean, we thought that this was going to be, you know, the Gladiators, the game of the year, the game of the century, and it just didn't turn out that way. I mean, the Huskies came to play, and, man, what happened with the Cardinal?
Listen, as a Stanford alum, I will say Friday night was like getting a root canal. It was that bad. And I give all the props in the world to the Huskies because this is the first time, and I said it in a commentary last night, first time in about 15, 16 years that this team has come out and physically dominated a top 10 opponent. They have not had the bodies. They've not had the strength to do that. And they essentially beat Stanford at their own game. I mean, they were punishing on both lines of scrimmage, in the offensive and defensive lines. And the fact that they sacked Stanford 8 times and didn't blitz once is a huge testament to how good this Huskies defense is. And I know the comparisons were made before the game, how great it would be to have that game like the Todd Marinovich game at Husky Stadium back in the day. Well, this was very, very similar because the Stanford Cardinal weren't able to do anything on offense. I was a little bit worried at the beginning going into the game that Stanford wasn't going to have their starting two cornerbacks. And yes, that did play a role, but it wasn't a major factor when you look at the grand scheme of things. They just got beat up left, right, and sideways on Friday. And, you know, the Stanford-Washington State line came out at 12.5. It's already down to 7.5. And I wouldn't be surprised if it continues to drop, because right now, the way I saw Stanford play last week, I think Washington State has a really good chance, especially the way they played Stanford last year in Pullman, almost beating the Cardinal in Pullman. They have a little bit of revenge to get as well. So you could see Stanford potentially losing two straight weeks, including this week at home to Washington State.
Aaron, what does it say for the UW program that the Stanford Cardinal and head coach David Shaw seem to not have any answers for everything, both offensively and defensively, that Chris Peterson was throwing at them?
I think it was a kind of a deer in the headlights situation for Stanford in general. This was just the second road game that Ryan Burns has played as quarterback, and it certainly wasn't anything like the Rose Bowl atmosphere. This was twice, if not three times, the atmosphere that they played on the road against UCLA. Husky Stadium was absolutely electric, and being inside that stadium gave me goosebumps, even though I was rooting for the other team. And listen, I root for the Huskies pretty much every other game in every other sport the rest of the year. It's just this one game, and I was incredibly struck by the atmosphere inside of that stadium. There's no question that not only the Huskies played off of that atmosphere, but Stanford was somewhat fearful from the very beginning. They got punched in the mouth, and they never were able to recover.
Aaron, how has Chris Peterson turned the Huskies around so quickly?
I think doing it his way. I think the very first year, remember when he suspended certain players or he cut certain players, including that back and forth with Marcus Peters, and he eventually was cut from the team. He instilled his program, his discipline, the same way that they did at Boise State, and they have stuck to the plan every step of the way, and they're building it the right way. Even David Shaw in the lead up to the game last week said that he was incredibly scared and disappointed that Washington had hired Chris Peterson 3 years ago, because he knew what they were going to be in for, that he is a leader of men, and the way that they want to build that program is with guys that are upstanding guys that are exceptional performers on the field, and that's what he's done. They've recruited well, they've built that strength program incredibly well, and they're a lot more disciplined than they have been in the past under Sark and former coaches. So you might not get a lot out of Peterson when he's being interviewed. He might not like to do a lot of interviews, but he certainly gets the results, and you see the results on game day, and we've seen it the last couple of years.
Now, Aaron, of course, we're talking the Washington Huskies, and you know, this is an exciting time for all fans in the Northwest. Now, where do you see the Huskies finishing this thing out? I mean, of course, you know, they've got to go against, you know, the coaches' polls. They have to go against, you know, all these rankings and, of course, play their teams head-to-head. Are they a national championship team?
They are a college football playoff team if they play every week like they did last Friday night against Stanford. But this conference is so tough top to bottom that I can't sit here and say they're going to go to the college football playoff and go 12-0 and make the Final Four, because you don't know those hurdles that you're going to have to go through as the season plays out. I would love to see them run the table, and there's no doubt they have the potential to run the table, but despite as bad as Oregon is, it is not an easy test going on the road. This team, this Huskies team, has only gone on the road one time this year in five games, and we saw how difficult a time they had closing it out at Arizona. Yes, they won that game. Oregon's not the best team in the world. People are expecting the Huskies to blow them out, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they went into Autzen Stadium, and they're still not a team that has a lot of experience going on the road in a hostile environment. So you have to go to Eugene. You have to go to Utah. You have to go to Cal, which all of a sudden is a program that has turned itself around, a huge upset win at home against Utah last week. So there are different hurdles that could get in the way of this Huskies team on the way. All I know is the team that I saw on Friday night absolutely has the potential to be a top four team in the country and threaten for that national title when it's all said and done.
Wow, Aaron, you definitely have me nervous when you start to put things into perspective that way. As you had mentioned, Sonny Dykes has that team clicking on all cylinders in Berkeley, and you can never count an Oregon team out, even though they've had their ups and downs. They're still scoring 30, 35 points a game, and anything can happen as long as they can, you know, if a team puts things together.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether they're playing the Ducks or a completely different team this week if you've seen their uniforms. check out Twitter. Apparently they're playing the Webfoots, which is the historic name of their mascot back in the day, if you go back to the late 1800s, I guess,
wow.
Or the early 1900s. So they have these uniforms that say Webfoots on the chest, and they look nothing like their normal uniforms. And I think this whole uniform thing has gotten out of hand, if you ask me. And I think Oregon should probably just focus more on getting wins in the conference more than anything. But, it should be very interesting. And I can't believe it's now been 12 years, and well, I guess 13 years, a 12-year streak, 13 years now that the Huskies haven't beaten the Ducks. So hopefully they can end that streak at 12 games this week in Eugene.
Aaron Levine, Q13 Sports Director in Seattle. Thank you for your time, your insight. You can follow Aaron at Aaron Q13 Fox. Check him out tonight, Q13 Fox News in Seattle. Aaron, appreciate your time, your insight, as always.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
There goes Aaron Levine from Q13 Fox in Seattle, doing great things and busy as always, getting those news highlights and stories out tonight in Seattle.
Man, you know, gosh, I can't thank Aaron enough. I mean, he takes time out of his busy schedule, and he says, man, I'd love to be on the show with you guys and give us some awesome insight, both NFL and collegiate. And, boy, just to think, man, we're only a quarter of a way through the season for college and the pros, and there's a lot of fun left, a lot of season left. Things can change quickly.
So you're saying there's three quarters of fun left in the football world?
Oh, yeah. You know, and man, when we start to get into, you know, late November and December to where, you know, everything starts to materialize a little bit, and then there are a few teams jostling for, you know, postseason, you know, I'm just hoping that, I mean, you're probably more confident than me, the Seattle Seahawks have, this is old hat for them as far as that time of the year, but for an Oakland Raider fan, man, it's going to be a different feel, and if these guys can, you know, keep the string going, man, it's going to be exciting in Alameda.
And that's what you hope for as a fan, as Raider Nation, as fans of whatever your team is, that your team is in it. Your team wins more than they lose. Your team gives them a shot, gives themselves a shot to be in the playoffs, to make a wild card, to win the division, to have a chance in college at that big bowl game, or if even better, the college football playoff.
Yeah, you know what I'm more excited about is, you know, over the past 5 years, I believe it's been about four years, the Raiders have put this god-awful tarp up just above Mount Davis, and it has the Raider logo up there, and I know Mark Davis does that because he wants to have these sellout crowds, and I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, Sean. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars do it. A couple other teams in the NFL do it to boast their sellout crowds. What I would like more than anything is for Mark Davis, or actually the Raider Nation faithful, to just, you know, petition and say, look, man, we want to totally sell out this Coliseum. Take that doggone tarp off and let us fill it to the gunnels so that we can really have this loud, raucous crowd, the crowd of old. And, man, you can tell I'm pumped up.
Well, with a team 3-1, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to sell out the
whatever
the Coliseum is named now, the big concrete cavern.
Yeah, I mean, so right now their capacity is about 55,000. If you take the tarp off, it's roughly around 65,000. And, you know, I think the interest level is there, and I don't know what's taken so long for for the powers that be to do that. I don't know if there's some league stuff that you have to go through because you've said that your stadium seats a certain amount or what. But, man, I think that the interest level is there. And, you know, Oakland can definitely pack that thing to the top.
Now, Sean, as we got to briefly at the top of the show, it was a busy weekend for both you and I. You talked about working for Fox at the Buttonfly Levi's Stadium, seeing the Cowboys dismantle the 49ers. And you also had a fun night on Friday getting to rub elbows with former guests here on the Double.
Yeah, man, it was a birthday celebration for George Foreman Jr. And, of course, he lives here in Sacramento. And, of course, we had another on the Double guest in Yogi Stewart. And he played basketball for the Sacramento Kings, and he's also a local favorite here and went to high school here in the Sacramento area. And it was so awesome because, you know, getting to be around George, and it's his birthday. You know, you talk about somebody who is unselfish and takes his mind off himself and focuses on other people. He actually threw this gala for an organization, for a great cause, and it was for Loaves and Fishes. And for those of you who don't know about Loaves and Fishes is they help the community as far as, you know, meals are concerned, get the homeless back on their feet. And so what he did is he did a fundraiser on his birthday, and you talk about one of the great successes, man. We just had a blast. I mean, you know, just, you know, like you said, rubbing elbows, meeting with people, and, you know, getting a chance to meet other, you know, top people, local people in the area. It was a lot of fun, man. And I appreciate George for that and just saying, hey, Sean, we want you to come to the party. And, you know, it was a great night.
Yeah, of course, I saw pictures you put on social media and sent me directly as well. And it looked like a lot of fun. And it's probably pretty awesome to be able to put faces and a handshake with guys that we've gotten to know through our show.
Yeah, you know, George says that he definitely wants to get together, the three of us, me, you, him, and, you know, get some things going, collaborate something, and, you know, see if we can make that successful. I'm excited.
That would be awesome. That would be amazing if we could get more involved in boxing and somehow help that sport get back to the levels it was in the mid-90s.
Yeah, so, you know, a great weekend for me, you know, starting out with that celebration. And then, of course, you know, working for Fox Sports with the Dallas and San Francisco 49ers game. Oh, my gosh, man, I tell you, I have to take a deep breath every time I go into Buttonfly. But, yeah, it is what it is. It's work. And, you know, I thank God that I have that opportunity to work. But for you, man, you had the chance to work a Pac-12 game, the game that Aaron was just talking about, one of the games we were talking about, Washington State and Oregon. So the Ducks came into the Palouse. How was your weekend, man?
You know, it was a crazy week leading up to the weekend because so much was going on in the state of Washington, major sports-wise. You had the Mariners having one final home series with the A's. So you had all the people working television for not only the Mariners, but the A's broadcast. Then you had the big Husky-Stanford game we talked about, and ESPN was in town for that to show the nation. So you had people working that game and the Mariner game same night on Friday. So I was all scheduled to work the Husky game, and then midweek Pac-12 Network swoops in and says, hey, can you work for us 2 days in Pullman? Said, I'm there. So made the long drive through the wheat fields of the Palouse, and it was a good time. There were people from all parts of the country. They even flew somebody in from Salt Lake City to help us out and set cable and power. And, you know, it's always great when you see 20, 30, 40 people come together and make a broadcast happen. And that's what we did at Martin Stadium. And, you know, it was a lot of fun once fans got in the stadium and the student section was full and the Ducks showed up, tried to take over. And, wow, I was surprised. I was surprised that the Oregon Ducks looked like a shell of their former selves, and I was wondering the whole time how badly they want Chip Kelly back at Oregon.
Hey, well, if the 49ers keep doing what they're doing, man, Chip will be back sooner than later. I tell you that.
And yeah, it was just a lot of fun, great weather, and it did get colder, of course, being at 2,300 feet. And once the sun went down and fall's approaching and we're in the Halloween time, but it was dry, so that was good. And it really was. It was, you know, with the music bumping and the great lights throughout the stadium and also on the video screens and video boards. And I was hearing a lot of that great touchdown Cougs as Mike Leach's team ran roughshod over the Oregon Ducks.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because the PA announcer at Wazoo is, you know, one of the reasons why I started to do PA announcing. And so whenever I heard him say that, you know, whenever you aspire to do something, all you have to do is be a great copycat and then kind of tweak a couple of things and make it your own. But I did. I took that part of his trademark touchdown call and brought that down to Northern California. And when I started to do that at the high school levels, and even I actually got my start at the Pop Warner levels, man, you talk about people just, you know, in awe of that. And I always think back whenever the Cougars score that touchdown, to hear that, and, you know, is just, you know, one of the greatest calls in PA history, if you ask me.
Well, his name is Glenn Johnson that dons the mic at Martin Stadium.
Right.
And I would love to get a chance to see him do that in person one of these days when I'm working a game in Pullman. And it's just crazy, that touchdown call. It's his signature for sure.
Yeah. Hey, I can tell you what it looks like. I look at myself in the mirror when I practice that. It doesn't look good, Sean. It doesn't. But it sounds good over the microphone, and that's all that counts.
Well, I know up here in Seattle, the 12th man, or I should say the 12s, as they're called now, the agreement with Texas A&M. The 12s get a weekend off. No Seahawk game this weekend. And guess what? No Cougar game in Washington. No Washington Husky game in Seattle. So therefore, not a lot going on in the Pacific Northwest this weekend. So yours truly, maybe, cross his fingers, might get a weekend off. That's not the case for one Sean Boyd, now is it?
No, actually. Of course, working yesterday at Levi Stadium, I get a whole day and a half off, and then I head back to the Button Fly to prepare for the Thursday night game in Santa Clara, where Carson Palmer, which it sounds like he's going through the concussion protocol, should be ready for Thursday. The Arizona Cardinals and the San Francisco 49ers battle. And then right after that, going into Sunday, yours truly will leave Thursday Night Football in America, or Thursday Night Football, and then head to Oakland, where there is a big divisional game there where the San Diego Chargers come into town to take on the Oakland Raiders. So a busy, busy week for me.
Well, hey, enjoy it, because it doesn't always happen that way. And do your best to bring us more big-time guests for the show.
Yes.
And give us a preview of what our fans can look forward to next week here on The Double.
Well, you know, Sean, we were talking about, or I was just mentioning George Foreman and what he was doing with Loaves and Fishes in the community. And, of course, celebrating his birthday. Next week, we're going to have an exciting guest on. And her name is Crystal Clark. She runs an organization, or she's heading an organization called Rock, Paper, Scissors. And their organization, along with my wife, who is one of the directors as well, the regional director in California, we're going to be talking about domestic violence, which you know, some of you might be thinking, man, what does that have to do with sports? Well, if you've been keeping track on what's been going on with some of your professional athletes over the past few years, there's a lot of correlation. And so, you know, I'm excited to have Crystal Clark on because, you know, this is a discussion that needs to be had. There are some things that are going on and, you know, that, you know, in a relationship, you know, you have, it's two ways. You know, you have to make sure that you're a good listener and you can't have the type of attitude, especially as a male. And I'm not just saying that domestic violence is male driven only. It happens both ways, but there has to be strong communication. So I'm looking forward to having Crystal Clark on next week to talk about some of those things. And we'll talk about the correlations between that and professional sports. So this should be a great show next week.
A nice change of pace, but a topic that is near and dear to some, unfortunately, and something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, you know, and so one of the things that I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I'm challenging you here, Sean Wally, here on the double. So Denise had challenged me as far as it's the Band-Aid challenge. And so basically what this Band-Aid challenge is it's an awareness for domestic violence. And so you can wear the Band-Aid anywhere you want, and it's for the month of October. And I know that the month of October is also Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but it's also Domestic Violence Month to bring that awareness forward. So I am challenging you, along with myself, to wear a Band-Aid for Domestic Violence Awareness. Man, are you up for the challenge?
Somewhere, anywhere, specific spot? What are we talking?
No, just as long as it's visible. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be anything ridiculous. And it's not something that you know, you're trying to, you know, do something silly. It's just, again, to bring awareness to domestic violence.
Specific color or just a Band-Aid?
Well, I mean, I know that we have green and blue and, gosh, my wife brought home a bunch of different Band-Aids. But, yeah, it doesn't have to be a specific color.
Awesome. I'll be sporting the Scooby-Doo Band-Aid Denise, and rock, paper, scissors.
I thought that it would at least be Seahawk green or blue for you, you know, so I, you know, we'll make it easy for you.
I'm sure you would agree. I do enough Seahawk, this, that, and the other, so, but yes. We'll throw a Band-Aid on for sure.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, man, Mr. Wally, it's been a great show. And, of course, man, we had two awesome guests on. And go ahead and tell our listeners what the rundown was.
Well, hopefully you listened and you know who we had on the show. But still, we'll give a thank you and a shout-out to Matt Snyder of CBSSports.com, baseball writer, getting ready for the playoffs in the major leagues. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Snyder CBS. And of course, Seattle's own Q13 Fox sports director, Aaron Levine. Follow him at Aaron Q13 Fox, bringing us insight on the Seahawks, the Huskies, and of course, the Huskies trouncing his alma mater, the Stanford Cardinal.
Boy, that was a really tough question to ask him, man, and he took it on the chin. But hey, that's the way Aaron Levine is, and he is an awesome dude to come and be on this show. And man, I couldn't even begin to tell you. 40. Anyway, I won't even go into that, man.
But Sean, did you notice live that when you were kind of trying to figure out how to intertwine to the Husky game, and he was like,
Yeah.
Like he knew it was coming. He was waiting for the haymaker.
He was waiting, man, but hey, he took it like a champ, no doubt. And man, we appreciate Aaron Levine for being on this show, man. Well, hey, that's going to do it for us here on The Double. Man, be sure to go into our archives. If you want to listen to more of On The Double in our archives, you can go to www.bbsradio.com/DSX. You can find some of the great, great On The Double guests, because we do bring in great sports talk, big-time guests, and big-time sports talk. Like we always say here on The Double, you're not in the game unless you take that shot. And when you take that shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. For Sean Wally up in Selah, Washington, Doug Newson, our engineer in Paradise, California, and yours truly at the EG Studios here in Elk Grove, you've been listening to On.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.